Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Nick and Weiss here with you. No Ethan. Before we get to today's episode, got to take care of our housekeeping. Be sure to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast. Follow me at Nick Soraris. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Ethan at EthanGSN. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Oh my God, Weiss, does it ever end? Does it ever end?
No, it does not. I guess we'll start with the Shane Bowen stuff, right? Inevitable, I think, at this point. I think when you've blown, what was it, 5 or 6 leads in the fourth quarter like this, and, you know, once again, it's the same thing. You know, you don't stop the run. You give up these big chunk plays. You can't hold the lead. Shane Bowen had to go. But for real, like, when you talk about Shane Bowen, and like I said, that's where we'll start, is Shane Bowen, from the moment he was hired to the moment he was fired, I don't think he had a lot of fans in the building. I think the way the Wink thing ended, and the fact that the Wink Martindale defense, while it was, I think, flawed, was still a success. It was still, on its worst day, a league average defense, despite the talent being bottom tier talent. Wink Martindale knew how to get stuff out of Giants players. And the fact that he left, and the way that he left, and then Shane Bowen coming in, and immediately from the moment that he came in, you know, that first season and those first couple of games, you started to hear how players weren't buying into what he was selling. You heard the fact that players don't believe in his system, how easy it is for opposing offenses to understand the lack of success, the fact that it was, you know, bottom five from the moment he stepped foot in the building with the same personnel that, you know, Wink Martindale had, in some cases even better. It was just destined to fail. And I think it culminated to yesterday, where another blown lead. And we can talk more in depth about it, but just like my opening thought is, like, yes, Shane Bowen should have been fired. I'm actually surprised. Like, after week three, Nick, after that Dallas debacle, every week outside of the games that they won, every week I was like, this has to be it for Shane Bowen, right? Like, whether it was San Francisco, right, where they just was dead defensively, or the second Philadelphia game where Philadelphia came in not being able to run the ball, and they have two guys that rush for over 200 yards. They have Tank Bigsby that gives up, you know, that gets a first down on a 35-yard run when it was second and 32. Like, there's been so many moments, right, like this season with this defense where you're like, wait, that's got to be it for Shane Bowen, right? And ultimately, I think yesterday they just had no choice. Going up double figures in the way, you know, and we'll talk about the game too, but I thought the way how good the offense played against the defense, and I think the Lions defense was good. I mean, they played well against Philly last week on the road. You would have thought that, you know, up 10 points, not being able to get that win, it's just such a demoralizing thing. Big picture-wise, I mean, the Giants, in terms of these games, like we talk about it, they continue to find ways to lose games. They continue to design them. They can, when it comes to drawing up ways to lose games, the New York Giants are like Picasso. They can draw up the perfect way, where it's like, am I watching a television show of, like, the worst sports team ever assembled? Or is this, like, reality? And the reality is, like, this team just, it never amuses me with the way that they lose football games. And so, yeah, 2-10 for the second straight year.
I don't even know where to begin. The first thing I would say, I don't think Shane Bowen himself matters all that much. I think what Shane Bowen represents and what he says about the organization, I think that's why this is a real talking point. We know the defense is an atrocity. The talent isn't an atrocity. There's talent here. But the fact that after Wink, they needed someone and they couldn't convince a lot of people to come and get this job. They went probably 9-10 people down the list before they ultimately got to Shane Bowen. I forgot who pointed it out on Twitter today. It might have been Dan Duggan said the Giants could have let Shane Bowen leave last year. He was going to go to New England.
Ownership wanted that. They wanted him gone.
He was going to work with Vrabel because they had the connection from Tennessee. He was going to go up to New England. And the Giants could have let him go. But that would have created the problem of who are you going to get to replace him? And they didn't want to have the appearance of needing to get three coordinators in 3 years.
You said they didn't want to do the what? The what was the word you used? Appearance, right?
Yeah.
Optics.
And that's what's frustrating about this, because all of this political maneuvering, and that's what this is, you know, it's not politics in a literal sense, but it's backroom politicking. It's guys trying to leverage to get their interests across. And whether or not you think Dable did a good job assembling his staff, the organization signed off on it. And that's why, as the drumbeat marches on, the intensity and focus has to pivot to the general manager, because all of this undercurrent of the coaching stuff, the roster stuff, the player development, all of that has happened under his watch. And you can't defend the general manager by saying he can't do everything. He can't. You're right. But your job as a general manager is to pick the best people possible to do their jobs. And coming into this year with a lame duck everything, where you knew if things didn't go right for the coach, he was getting canned. If the coordinators, they could get canned. And assistant coaches matter. You look at the teams that consistently perform well, their coordinators are always getting opportunities to go other places. They are getting opportunities to progress. You know, your QB coach becomes your offensive your OC, and then your OC becomes associate head coach. Like, there are real opportunities in the NFL if you have good assistants. And when was the last time the Giants had a genuinely good coordinator on either side of the ball that went on and got poached to go coach somewhere else? That's not the best indicator of success, but you would think even by accident, the Giants would have found a guy who could have gotten decent results on one side of the ball or the other. And all of these decisions have happened under this general manager, and the general manager has somehow managed to keep the stink directly off of him, but he's okay with this. That's the problem here. He is managing to pin this on other people. And the problem with keeping him, and I know we're talking big picture stuff and the season's still got a month and a half to go, he's got to make decisions about the team next year. And he's not in this for the good of the team on some level. Some of this is going to be his own self-interest. Do you really want to turn a general manager into a coaching search, a free agency, an offseason with a you need to get real results right now mandate? Or do you want to roll the dice that you go in there with that mindset and everyone loses? Anytime you have general managers operating in these lame duck windows and with a real I need to save my ass mindset, that's how you get things like the one Giant season where you sign Jenkins and Snacks and Olivier Vernon and you get one good year out of it, and then you didn't actually accomplish anything. You got a short-term solution to a long-term problem. And until the Giants address the fact that they are dealing with long-term institutional problems, you can change everything. Change the coordinators, the GM, the players. That doesn't matter. These are fundamental root issues. Nobody gets better on this team. The talent is misidentified or put in situations where it can't succeed. And we have to deal with the consequences. They should have won that game yesterday. They got great work out of their backup quarterback, who is shown to be a reasonable backup. Like, Jameis is like the ideal backup for today's NFL. He's not going to consistently win you games, but he'll keep you in the games. He's good for a couple of flashy, exciting plays. You got quite a few of them yesterday. They should have beaten Detroit. That was a winnable football game. They should have beaten Denver. I can go on and on and on with all of these games. They have had good leads and played well and entirely wilted down the stretch. They are a joke. They first team eliminated from playoff contention in the entire league again. It is mind blowing how anybody could possibly keep their job after this.
Yeah, I think you brought up very good points. The big thing for me is, like, with Shane Bowen is, like, I would love Nick to sit up here and be like, you know what, Nick? We just solved our problems. We got rid of Shane Bowen. Like we're going to now win games. Our defense is going to play up to his potential. But I do not believe every single problem with the Giants this season has been because Shane Bowen's, you know, late game coaching decisions. And I understand people may think that, and people may, you know, overrate, you know, the roster, specifically some guys on defense. But at the end of the day, yes, on paper, the Giants have some good players compared to years past. But I still think this was an overrated roster. And where the talking point at the beginning of the season was like, this is going to be a top 10 defense. This is going to be one of the best defenses in the NFL. The Giants organization built this defense to help them win games. Because as I continue to remind people about what the 2025 season was supposed to be for the Giants, it was not supposed to be about progress. It was not supposed to be that we're heading in the right direction. It was not supposed to be like we have this great young nucleus. The 2025 season about the New York Giants was supposed to be about results. It was supposed to be about winning games. It was supposed to be about our problem was the quarterback. We got in a veteran quarterback. He's going to win us games, and he's going to have us playing competitive football in December. It was not, let's put Jackson Dart in week three so we can save our job. It was not, let's get rid of the defensive coordinator because he's not getting the most out of our players. That's not what this season was supposed to be about. This season was supposed to be about them getting results. At the end of the season, you as a fan, ownership, said it themselves, have to feel right about where the organization is. And right now, there's nobody. There's no fan. There's no coach. There's no owner. And I know they put out a statement. Nobody's happy about, should be happy about this. Nobody's okay with this. Nobody's looking at this as real progress. They're 2-10 for the second straight year. They're the first team mathematically eliminated from playoff contention for the second straight year. They are, along with the Tennessee Titans, have the two most losses in the NFL over the last two seasons. Nothing of that screams progress. None of those results are something that you can write home about. This is the worst team in the NFL. And just because, Nick, they have the lead for three quarters or they're in games for three quarters against some of the better teams in the NFC, that doesn't change the results. And that doesn't get to excuse the losses. This season was supposed to be results from Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. At the beginning of the season, the conversation was Russell Wilson is going to be this team's starting quarterback, and he is going to win us games. And when Russell Wilson showed that he was cooked, Jackson Dart came in, and there wasn't really any growing pains with the quarterback that they themselves wanted to redshirt this year. That was their plan. And when he played well, they were still losing games. So all signs continue to point to the fact that this roster is not good enough. Yes, their offensive line is better. Yes, they're getting a lot out of their offensive skill players with the loss of Malik Nabers. But defensively, they're giving up 200 yards per game on the ground. Jahmyr Gibbs had three rushes of over 60 yards where he was untouched. Untouched. Like, I'm sorry, I would love to sit up here and Nick and be like, the Giants just figured it out. We are going to take off. We're going to win games now because we fired Shane Bone. But the reality is this defense stinks. The depth stinks. And the most troubling thing and the most alarming thing about it all is the depth in the secondary is not guys that they picked up off the street 2 weeks ago. Deontay Banks was a first-round pick. Dane Bellin was a fourth-round pick. Tyler Newbin was a second-round pick. Like, you know, there's so much talk about, you know, the edge rushers and why they're not getting the most out of their pass rush despite the fact that they traded for Brian Burns and they, you know, drafted Abdul Carter and they, you know, drafted Kayvon Thibodeau in the top five. Their secondary has been the area that they invested in the most. They drafted Deontay Banks in the first round. They drafted Tyler Newbin in the second round. They went out and paid big money for Paulson Adebo and Javon Holland. Cordell Flott is a third round pick. How many top 100 picks have they spent on their secondary? And look at how atrocious it is. They've used a plethora of late round picks on these corners and these DBs. Drew Phillips, third round pick. Like, they have invested. That is the most alarming thing, is that they've invested so much in their secondary and they've yet to replace the guys that they let go in Julian Love and Xavier McKinney. That is the most alarming thing about all this, with Joe Shane. And that is the one area, when you dissect the record that they've had under Joe Shane, that is the one area that is the biggest red flag in why they should not run this back with this general manager, and why they're not headed in the right direction, is because that area of your football team, of your roster, that he's invested the most in, both in the draft and in free agency, is the weakest part of your entire team right now, injuries or not.
I wanted to add on to that. Everything we have said about fans, executive coach, how do you think the players feel? How do you think the guys who are going out there busting their ass every Sunday feel, knowing they're on the worst team in the league, the people around them are operating solely out of self-interest? And I know we've been pretty hard on guys and saying, well, if the people above them aren't going to fix their problems, why would they? But at the same time, everybody has had that experience at the workplace where you know things around you are not going well, and what that does to you about how productive you feel like you could be. And sometimes you can fake it. Sometimes you can muster up whatever you need to manage your way to be successful in spite of what's going on around you. The problem for the Giants is they don't have the individual talent for guys to overcome these situations. You hear it all the time. There are great teams that are able to overcome behind-the-scenes stuff. You think about those Steeler teams with Tomlin, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell. You think about all the guys the Chiefs have had over the years who off-the-field stuff. When you are a good team,
Philadelphia this year,
the Eagles right now, where, sure, the Eagles have questions, they have problems behind the scenes, but their individual talent is enough that against the league's worst teams, against poor teams, they can get by. They can make it happen. The Giants, they don't have the individual talent. They don't have the coaching to get more out of their talent. And you are left with what is a loose collection of guys who are all wearing the same jersey that don't feel like much of a team, who are trying but aren't being channeled to be put in good situations. And it weighs on you. You know, I always think about how last week when we had talked, you said something to the effect of Dexter Lawrence has been in the league a long time now. He's been on one team that's had a winning record. Do you know what that does to you mentally, where even if you're busting your ass, and Dex to this point has been a really good football player for this team, you think about what it's done to Andrew Thomas, these guys, serious life-changing injuries that are months of your life to come back from, to come back to this, to come back to a team that can't win four or five games. Hell, I always say you would think the Giants could luck into a decent season every now and then, and they got their one couple years ago now. It's going to be a while before they luck into another decent season. But you look at the aggregate of the last 10 plus years now, this is a poorly run franchise from top to bottom. Every aspect of this organization does not work. And we gave them credit for going outside the cycle, outside the organization, outside the family, for going to get Shane, going to get Dable. You need to continue doing that. And I understand there is a reticence to repeat the same mindset. I know you are watching a lot of people in the New York media clamor for people like Lou Anarumo, Mike McCarthy, people who are older, a lot more experienced. That's why Spags' name was out there, at least when the cycle first started. You need to go outside of your comfort zone. You need to continue to try and imitate and mimic what is working around the league. Because if you go to the well of former proven coach or guy who has ties to the area, ties to the organization, you are limiting yourself. And it's crazy to me that it is being justified as, well, if you're going to keep Shane, he can only interview so many people. Why? You have the advantage of, you already fired your head coach and it's only November. Sure, you can't interview people who are presently working for teams. Interview 5 to 10 college coaches. Interview a bunch of people who aren't on staffs right now. Get as much information as you can before you want to make any final decision. Same thing with if you want to get maybe somebody else in your operations, if you want to put someone under Joe Shane, you want to give him a right hand, or you want to put someone above him. This is the time where you can take advantage of the fact you've already made some decisions and have taken some action. There's no point in half measures. half measures are how you keep ending up where you miss the good coaching cycle, you miss the good quarterback cycle, and it is infuriating. You should not have to punt an entire season to recognize something isn't working. This is 2 years now where the wheels have entirely come off, and we're saying this in spite of the fact we think they've identified a quarterback who can be a starter in the long term. Even with Jackson Dart, like I said before, there's only so much a handful of good players can do when everything else around them is terrible. You don't want to waste this kid. He might be a guy. The longer you allow Shane to operate in his own self-interest and get guys who are willing to sign on for, that's the other thing. You want to interview guys, you're tethering him to them. And Shane is going to be on a 1 or 2 year leash. And then you're going to change the coach again anyway, because any new GM is going to want a new coach anyway. So that's why doing the half measure thing is so infuriating and so frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. That's the biggest issue. And when you talk about comfort and you talk about experience, that's how you land on a Shane Bowen, right? I mean, that other guys say no to you and you're left with your fourth or fifth option. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's the thing. That's when you talk about these type of names and these type of things you hear, it's like, that's how you land on Shane Bowen. When like the top candidates refuse to talk to you because you have a head coach on the hot seat, like that's similarly what's going to happen to the Giants, I think, if they keep Joe Shane. Now, obviously, I think a head coaching job is a head coaching job and everyone's going to take it. But look, I just think that, you know, this organization, where they are right now, and again, you know, we're sticking on this big picture thing, but it's like,
you have to. We can't worry about the details when the big picture, like that would be like working on the appliances in your house if it was sinking into the ground. Sure, it's great you got a new fridge, but the house is still sinking into the ground. Yeah. You can't like have a team till the foundation's right.
When I watch this team, I just don't know. And I see the results week after week. I just don't know how anyone in their right mind can think that they're headed in the right direction, or that their issues are simply coaching. I mean, they lack talent. Look, like you said, they might have found you your franchise quarterback. That makes this job 10 times better than a lot of other jobs, because they've already done the hard thing of finding a quarterback. But again, like I said, this season was about results, not feeling good about Jackson Dart. And, you know, 20-42-1 is just not good enough. I don't understand how you can sit there at the end of the year and add another 3-4 win season, which is why I think everything is really on the table with the Giants. I truly believe that the New York Giants right now don't know what they're going to do. But I also can say, if the season ended today, I would say it's 50-50 that they clean house. I really do believe that. And it just depends on which part of ownership that you talk to. And then another thing about the players, and this is another reason why cleaning house is so important, in my opinion. Nick, winning, there's no like playbook of this is how you win games. There's different ways you can win games. There's ways you can, you know, things happen during games where you end up with a result that, you know, gives you the win. But there's three important elements to winning in the NFL. It's like, you have to have talent. Coaching only takes you so far. You have to have the right coaching. Coaching can't be a liability for you. It can't be the reason you're not winning games. And third is the mindset and the culture in your organization has to be that of winning is not accepted here. Excuse me, losing is not accepted here.
That's what it is right now. Winning isn't accepted.
Yeah, winning isn't accepted right now, but losing is not accepted here. It's not a part of our day-to-day lives as a professional football player here. When we put the jersey on Sundays, we're not going out there with the mindset of, oh, you know, if we lose, it's okay. And right now it is. And that doesn't mean that guys are happy that they're losing. It doesn't mean that guys are, you know, not giving effort. It's a simple fact, like, this is their profession. Like, this is part of it. When you're Dexter Lawrence and you've played 9 years and you've had only one winning season in those 9 years or 8 years, like, this is what you're used to. You're used to coming in, playing well individually, but in the end you lose games. when you're Brian Burns and you were in Carolina and you went through more coaching changes in the winning seasons, you know, that's what you're used to. That's the only thing you know. You play great individually, but you know you're going to lose games. And that's the scary thing about it, because for a little part of this season, the Giants had a couple of guys that didn't think that way, that didn't act like way that way, and didn't live with that mindset. And that was the quarterback and that was the running back. And you cannot allow your quarterback to fall into that belief cycle, because it's very tough to get out of that. And that's why you need new voices in this building. You need a new method of how you run your football operations. This is not fixable by just saying we need to fire Shane Bowen and bring in a guy that's going to disguise blitzes. This isn't fixable because going out there and hiring the brightest offensive mind. They already tried that 4 years ago. This is fixable only by ownership looking at themselves and looking at the way they are running their football operations and deciding what we need to do and what we don't need to do. And until there's an honest conversation, hey, they might go out and hire the next hot GM candidate, the next hot coaching candidate. But you know what, Nick? I promise you in the next 4 or 5 years, we're probably going to be having this discussion again. It starts at the top.
And that's ownership. That's not the top as in like front office. It's the ownership.
No, it's ownership, because ownership is a part of the front office. And it's obvious that they're a part of the front office. And when you have fire-free individuals in your front office and you're calling the shots, it's very tough. And that goes to the lack of accountability that has spread throughout this organization. I mean, look at the finger pointing. It's the quarterback. Let these guys pick their quarterback. They did do that. The results are still the same. The offensive line. Andrew Thomas is hurt. When he gets back, this thing's going to get rolling. Offensive line's playing great.
The results
are still the same. Brian Daboll just not able to coach anymore. We got to switch things up. Mike Kafka comes in, and it's not like they're losing games with Mike Kafka. They're losing games the same way with Mike Kafka. It's constant finger pointing, whether it's at a coordinator, at a player, at a position group, whatever. That is the one thing that Joe Shane, outside of not taking a quarterback 2 years ago, that is the best thing that Joe Shane is good at, is that's this constant, it's that, it's this, it's that, it's this. We do that, we're going to win games. We do that, we're going to get the results we want. And every year, it's 2-10. It's 3-9. It's top 5 pick. And that's what they're selling you on. Because come October, November, the past couple of years, what has the fan base done? They've been rooting for losing. So they've been happy with losing. Because it's been all about the top draft pick. So
I am just so beyond it, man. Like, there was not a shadow of a doubt Detroit was going to win the game yesterday. Even with the lead, even with the performance they were getting. Wandale had the game of his life yesterday, and didn't matter. There was
I think Jameis Winston played one of the best games we've seen a Giants quarterback play in a long time. I really do believe that. I believe he played one of the best games we have seen from a quarterback, Giants quarterback, in a long time. And I thought he was good the last 2 weeks. I know Green Bay, they dropped a lot of interceptions. But Jameis Winston's a career backup. Like, your expectation can't be elite quarterback play. For a backup quarterback, back-to-back weeks put you in position to win the game in the fourth quarter, in the final minutes, and you don't do that. It's just it's numbing to us, but it's just so inexcusable. And it sucks for Jameis. And you know what? With Mike Kafka, I thought Mike Kafka called a great game too. I thought Mike Kafka,
the trick plays were great. They got Wandale involved. Great job.
He had his finger on the pulse all game. He knew what to call, when to call it. I have zero problem with him going for it on fourth down. Zero. None whatsoever. And I think people just live for the results in that circumstances. But Kafka going for it on that fourth down was the right decision, because kicking a field goal and then Detroit going down and scoring a touchdown. It was just been about how Kafka is scared, coaching scared, you're 2-9, what do you have to lose? But the fact that Kafka went for it, and again,
he knows he's got nothing to lose. He knows exactly. If I do a good job, maybe someone will give me a chance. He's better off playing for wins.
And the thing that bothers me most, and I know people probably don't agree right now, but I think there is a good head coach in Mike Kafka. I really do believe that. I think there's a very good coach in Mike Kafka. I can see, when I listen to him talk, I can see sort of the vision that he has on how he wants to run a team. I think, you know, some of the stuff that we've heard about how he wants to build a coaching staff, specifically on the defense side of the ball, his aggressive mindset. And there's one thing to be aggressive occasionally. There's another, we call that reckless. There's another thing to be aggressive consistently, and that shows that you're aggressive. He's aggressive consistently. I just think it sucks because if Mike Kafka was the offensive coordinator somewhere else and he was doing what he's doing now with a backup quarterback offensively, he'll be at the top of the Giants head coaching list. Like, we'd be talking about him. Like, could you imagine if he was on another team, right? And back-to-back games against Green Bay and Detroit, he's the play caller, and he's had 500 yards of total offense against Detroit to come off a 300-yard performance against Green Bay, and having, developing this young rookie quarterback in Jackson Dart. You don't think, Nick, that he would be right up top the Giants coaching list? Seriously, like, I'm asking you, like, do you think that we would be looking at him in a different angle as we are now?
I really am. I would think so, but I also think at that point, I think you really want to create some. It's hard because we're talking about the appearances and the politicking side of it in relation to the football, because that's the thing here.
Let me give you a hypothetical real quick, okay?
Okay.
Joe Burrow gets hurt, right? They have an interim coach. Excuse me. They have a backup quarterback playing, which was Joe Flacco. Mike Kafka is the offensive coordinator. Mike Kafka, in back-to-back weeks with a backup quarterback, puts them in position to win games, but their defense is not closing. Coming off the fact that Mike Kafka is known for his development of Joe Burrow and his development of other young quarterbacks, do you not think he would not be at the top of the Giants coaching?
I really don't have a great opinion on this because I don't know the criteria they're looking at when they're putting together these lists. Like, for me, in a vacuum, sure.
No, I'm talking about it in terms of, like, the fans. Like, would we not have him up there with Minter and with Clint Kubiak and with Chris Shula and with all these other great coordinators? Would Mike Kafka's name not be up there? Like, just look at Mike Kafka as if – look at his resume as if it was from another team right now, not with the Giants.
I don't think –
Kansas City, yeah. Work with Mahomes under Andy Reid, goes to a place. Daniel Jones has a very good year under him. Then they go through a thing where they don't have a quarterback. Then they get Jackson Dart, and he's the play caller for Jackson Dart. And Jackson Dart is playing so well. And then, with Jackson Dart out, Jameis Winston, a career backup, steps in. And they don't lose a beat offensively. And they lose weapons offensively. And he's still having 500-yard games. And that offense, which doesn't have a lot of talent, is playing really, really well. Would we not have him, Mike Kafka, at the top of our list?
Really? I think there needs to be team success. I think that's the thing. That's the problem. All of what you're saying is true, but teams don't take coordinators from 5-win teams, 4-win teams. That's the only drawback, the only reservation I have for you. Because on paper, if you're only talking about production, yeah, sure. But you, as an assistant, if you want to get promoted to head coach, you need to show that you are the contributor to a winning team, a winning program, a winning culture. And he's got the Kansas City ties for sure, but I would want to see more as an offensive coordinator as far as team success, because there are things like efficiency that factor in, because you could throw 500 yards. Doesn't mean you had a good game. Granted, you did, but you can't. So you don't necessarily need to. That's the only real pushback I have there. Generally speaking, if you're going to hire a coordinator, you want to see If it's an offensive guy, you want to see quarterbacks getting from point A to B to C, making linear progression, getting better, evolving, and you want to see some team success because there are plenty of good stat, bad team guys out there who can hang around. And that's an honest living. There are plenty of quarterbacks around the league who can do that and are going to do that for the foreseeable future. But I would say even with if he were on another team that was winning four or five games consistently, I don't think he would be taken that seriously here. If he was still in Kansas City, sure. If he was in the Nagy spot, yeah, absolutely. But I think the lack of team success, that prevents a lot of coordinators from getting opportunities to advance.
I think that's fair. I mean, I looked it up when Sean McVay got the head coaching job because I know he was in Washington before the Rams. They finished third, but they went 8-7-1. Like they had a winning record. Yeah. And I can't really think of, I mean, Kyle Shanahan went to San Francisco after success with Atlanta. They went to the Super Bowl. Yeah. So you're right. I got no rebuttal on that. I tried to fact check you, but I couldn't.
It's one of those things. Like, and I agree with you. It shouldn't necessarily correlate, but that's just the way the football world works. I think there are probably coordinators out there on bad teams who could be decent head coaches, but people want to see success.
I think that's Mike Kafka. I do really believe there is a really, really good head coach in Mike Kafka. I honestly do believe that. I know there's a good play caller because I think he's been calling a hell of a games. Has he been perfect? No, but it just sucks for Kaf because I think, you know, they played so well the last 2 weeks to win. Like he wins the last two games, Nick. We're having a different conversation, obviously, about Mike Kafka. You know, and so it sucks for him. But you know that again, it's the result oriented business, and it's unfortunate. But kudos to Mike Kafka. Kudos to Jameis Winston. I'm very excited to watch Jackson Dart come back with Kafka being, you know, the only sound he hears. It's just unfortunate because I think if they win these last two games, which I think Mike Kafka did his part to put them in position to win these games. But as a head coach, you are judged based off the results, and that sucks for him.
Everybody associated with this is in a bad spot. And that's what's tricky about this, because not everybody here is as culpable. Not everyone here is equally culpable in why they are in this position. To your point, they've done reasonably well the last few weeks as far as moving the ball, making things happen. And I don't think it's Kafka's fault they lost yesterday. I think they did about as good a job as they could with the circumstances they were facing. And that's the other part. So much of production is tied to your environmental factors. Do you have the right players? Can you execute? And with a pretty ragtag group of guys, with Wandale and Isaiah Hodgins and a couple of third and fourth round tight ends, they moved the ball great against Detroit, who's been a pretty good defense. And yeah, if they win that game, it's a different conversation. If they beat Denver, if they beat the Eagles, there are so many of these games they quite easily could have won if they get the different breaks. But that's the value of having a certain type of guy. And I hate the cliche, good teams win, good teams find ways to win, but good teams find themselves in those close circumstances, in those situations, and they find ways to make things happen. And some of that's an extension of talent. Some of that's a managing coaching. But you need to be in the position to win the games. And the Giants are in these positions consistently to either put games away or pull off comebacks. And they don't have the goods, whether that's an execution thing, whether it's a mindset. They always have a reason, whether it's drops or the one sack they give up yesterday is the last play of the game, the last chance. And that's what happens when you're a losing team. You have those 50-50 situations and they don't go right. And until you can find someone that can get a handle on those 50-50s, you're not going to win. And so much of this league is on the margins. So much of this league, it only takes one more thing going right. And maybe we're talking about like a Giants team that has 6 or 7 wins right now. That's what's crazy about this. And I hate to sound like Shane. Last year, they weren't that far. They were in all those games. Same thing now. They're in these games, but they don't have the goods.
Yeah, I think the one thing I hate about this whole conversation is like during these games, like, well, every NFL game is close except like two a week. Like every game is like a one possession or like a two possession game entering the fourth quarter, you know? So that whole thing, it just bothers me that so much of the fam, and I think there's a good enough portion of this fan base that is like ready to revolt if they don't do the right thing at the end of the year. But I also think that there's enough fans, and I see this in my mentions, who are just like falling into this trap where it's like, it's not, we have talent, you know, it's coaching, you know, we should have 6-7 wins. But my rebuttal to that is the goal 6-7 wins, 8 wins, borderline playoff team, wildcard team, or is the goal Super Bowl? Like, are you any closer to winning a Super Bowl than you were when you hired these guys? Like, I don't know if I'm there. I feel like we have a much better quarterback, and I think that helps your odds. But everywhere else, it's just, I don't feel good about it. There are names. There's guys that are supposed to be playing well that haven't played well. But it's a very, very, very frustrating situation to be in, only because I think there's just a lack of faith in the ownership. And that's where a lot of the anger, a lot of the depression comes from, is the fact that this organization just seems like they're always two steps behind of the real issues. And they can't fix multiple things at one time. It's one thing. Let's see if this fixes it. No. Okay. Let's try a different thing. And, you know, that's how you get into a decade of losing.
It's a full decade of losing. You've had two winning seasons in 8 years. And the funny thing is, in real time, we acknowledge those two seasons were very much fugazi and products of unsustainable circumstances. And they didn't learn their lessons. They are still in a spot where we're sitting here. It's November 24th when we're recording this. We have no confidence in their ability to hire the right head coach. Their ability to help.
Here's the thing about 2022, right? Like, they're like, you know, Joe Shane has admitted, like, yeah, I drink the Kool-Aid on 2022. You know, I overestimated the success there, right? Well, they're doing the same thing right now. They won a lot of close games in 2022, and that's why they got to 9 wins and went to the playoffs. Well, if you're saying you overestimated it then, aren't you overestimating it now, Giants ownership? Because you're saying, well, we're in these games. Well, yeah, you're in these games, but you're losing. And you're not learning from, you know, you're telling me in 2022 that, you know, we overestimated because the games were so close, we won those games. Well, you're doing the same thing right now in just the opposite direction, where it's like you're overselling yourself because you kept a game close against the Lions or against the Packers or because you beat the Eagles or whatever. It's like you're overselling these close games that you have. And man, I can go on and on about just the total malpractice that this organization is running with. And it's just such a frustrating thing. Hopeless is the best way to describe it.
It's absolutely hopeless. And these death spirals are hard to get out of. That's the undercurrent of all of this. And we could start to wrap up on this note. There's no real feel that anything's going to change. And when you're stuck, as the Giants are, where they are run by a legacy ownership group, where they're third-generation owners now, you're not going to convince them that they don't know what they're doing. You're not going to convince them that they need to consider outside ideas, because they've had the franchise in the family for 100 years now. You're not going to convince them that what they're doing isn't working. And when that's the case, you get situations like this. And you think about some of the teams with similar trajectories or arcs. You think about how the Browns have been long tortured. You think about how the Lions have been long tortured. The Bengals have been long tortured. At some point, you needed something to break your way. The Bengals got Joe Burrow. The Lions got a head coach. And then they put together the rest.
And the thing about the Bengals' argument is, have they figured it out? They had one Super Bowl run, and since then Joe Burrow's constantly been hurt and they're constantly losing games. So it's like, have they figured it out?
They got somewhat out of it. Yeah, they are entirely contingent on Joe Burrow. but they at least have a path to respectability. And when you are a team with the problems, with the warts, sometimes you do need the savior. And it's one or the other. It's either the head coach or the quarterback. I don't think Jared Goff is the savior in Detroit. I think Absolutely. Dan Campbell is the savior in Detroit. And I think you look at – here's an example. You look at where the 49ers were when Harbaugh left for college. And they went into the abyss for a while. You had Chip Kelly. You had Jim Tomsula. And they identified Shanahan, and they oriented around it. Look at where the Rams were when McVay got there. Look at what had happened at the end in St. Louis, the Jeff Fisher years, when they moved to L.A. You need something to break right. And for the Rams, you got McVay. You traded for Stafford. It takes so much going right to get where you want to go. And that's what makes this scary. Because it's not only do the Giants need to get the roster right. They need to get the head coach right. They need to get the player personnel right. They need to get the development right. They need to get every part of this operation working. And they can't get one thing working. And that's why...
They can't do the easy thing correct.
Nope, you can't.
The easy thing is cleaning house. That's supposed to be the easy thing, right?
And that's why people don't like doing it, because it's the easy way out. We're supposed to steer our way through adversity. Good teams find ways. Well, you get to a certain point, and you don't get more chances. I am at a loss that they think it's okay to keep the GM. I think there's an argument if they lose out, I think we might still get our way, and maybe he gets canned. But
I think if they lose to New England, if they get embarrassed on Monday night against New England, or if they blow another lead against New England, or if it's another loss, I mean, man, this is. Like, you fall to 2-11, and I know they got some easy games coming up, Minnesota, the Raiders, they got the Commanders in there, and they got, I think, the Cowboys in there, too, and I think they have the Patriots next week, and then they have the bye, and then they got four games left. There could be some wins in there, but, like, man, I'm flabbergasted. I really want to know what's going through the head of ownership sometimes when they watch this game and I think about the losing, the years of losing. I'm like, man, is it just me? Because it's crazy. Some other notes I had on the game before we wrap up, Nick. I think Theo Johnson is turning into a legitimate tight end. I know he's had some drop issues, and I know some of his issues with blocking have been brought up, but I do think this is a legitimate playmaking tight end that the Giants have lacked. Devin Singletary, I think, deserves an apology from me because I thought he was completely washed. But Devin Singletary plays really, really hard, and I still think he's a valuable player on this team. Third was Dexter Lawrence not on the field on Shane Bowen's final, on that final play or that touchdown run. And he was crying on the sidelines. I still don't understand. I still don't have a clear-cut answer why he wasn't on the field. Like, okay, is he injured? Is he dealing with injuries, pitch count? But then crying, not being able to be out there. I'm just so confused. I don't know if you have any answers on that. Like, what the reasoning doesn't make sense. I'm saying, do you have a reason that makes sense?
Nope. Unless he's hurt, he's got to be on the field. That's it. That's it.
Yeah, I agree with there. And then... That was about it. I had something written down by Young Wei Koo, but that's not important.
I just wish these games mattered. That's what sucks, too. And we get so caught up in the big thing. We get so caught up in the big picture, directions. When was the last time we could sit down and genuinely look forward to a game? It is
2022.
Sports are supposed to be fun. This is supposed to be a hobby. Brings people together, something to do communally, civic pride, all the cliches, I just want to turn the Giants on a Sunday and not expect to watch the Hindenburg crash. That's really all I want. And respectability and mediocrity, as much as we point at the Steelers, they don't have a direction, at least they make the playoffs. At least they're competitive. At least they have exciting players who are put in good positions. The Giants are miserable every single week. And I hope Dart comes back this week. I hope he's good to go. All that good stuff. He can't win by himself. All I am hoping for is they start to instill some better habits in him as far as running habits, sliding, avoiding contact when you can. Because otherwise, we're just waiting for the next injury. But I am at a loss. All of the games they have lost where they have had these 10, 12, 14-point leads, and it's not even a question if they're going to lose or not. They're growing to find a way to lose. They have redefined what losing looks like in the National Football League.
For me, it's with Dart, it's I want them to win these games because the one thing about Jackson Dart that I think makes him so impressive is that he doesn't accept losing like a lot of other players in the locker room do. And I think you need that if you're trying to turn things around. It's a growing pain for him dealing with this. Like I said, he's new to it. He hasn't been a part of it for the past decade, but you want to see him lead the team to wins. And unfortunately, my fear is, you know, it's not that he's becoming a losing player. It's that he's growing accustomed. He will grow accustomed to losing. And if that happens,
it's the scariest part. And your good quarterback can get messed up. Good performances can't necessarily, like we were saying before about coordinators, you can be a good quarterback on a bad team. We see that quite pretty often where they can't win by themselves. Even the greats. You look at the situation some of the guys are in right now, like Lamar, like Mahomes. Those teams aren't in great shape. Look at what the Bills are going through right now. You can have the great quarterback. The Bengals, you can have the great quarterback and he gets hurt all the time and you don't really have the great quarterback. So just a lot of food for thought out there at this point in the season. And it sucks that we keep having to do these intellectual exercises instead of talking about the games. You know, the whole point of a football podcast is to talk about the games, but the games matter so little.
Correct. The only reason that they matter this late in the season is because of draft positions that people want to think. With that being said, they have the number two pick in the draft. So,
and they'll draft Caleb Downs, and he'll be ineffective. And they won't know how to use him. They won't have a defensive coordinator because they want to hire somebody who are – all right.
Something will go wrong. Let's just put it that way.
Yes. There always
goes wrong. There's something always goes wrong.
All right, that'll do it for this week's edition of NYG Weekly. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Follow me at Nick Zoraris. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Ethan at EthanGSN. We'll see you guys next week. Everyone have a safe and fun Thanksgiving.
Take care.